Buddhist Summer School, Thursday afternoon, 8th September 1983. Venerable Sirs, and my brothers and sisters longing to live the holy life, this is our last meeting this summer school. I should like first to deal with one little point, and it is not such a little point really, in connection with the word Atma as in Sanskrit and Atta as in Pali. Practically the whole human race, which wishes to think in terms of something which is immortal, permanent, talks in terms of my soul, my Atma, and so forth. There is no such thing as my Atma. Does the cosmos have me, or do I have the cosmos? That which is transcendent, the ultimate real, that which is infinite and eternal and immortal, cannot be split up as a personal possession by the mortal human being. The nama rupa, the psychophysical organism, is finite, temporal, mortal. That we must remember. Therefore, there is no such thing as my Atma, my God, my divine spark, and so forth. No such thing at all. God, divinity, the Atma, Brahman, use whatever word you like, which represents the absolute, the totality, has me. In the same way we talk of my karma. I don't have karma. Karma has me. But I won't deal with that today. I think I dealt with it last year. So now, if we can see that it is the Atta or Atma, the transcendent, whatever it is, which is absolute, which has each and every one of us, then we shall not fall into the error of thinking of a particular identifiable entity which is spiritual, which resides in us, and which is eternal. You cannot split up eternity and infinity. Absolutely impossible. Do remember that. So, if we see that, then we will be free of personal ambition, however spiritual, however exalted. We who study the teachings of one of the greatest teachers that the world has had so far, think that at the end of living the holy life, or maybe life after life, as we say, we shall realize Nibbana. We shall realize liberation, fruition, fulfillment. Nothing of the sort. I shall never realize that transcendent state of beatitude which is associated with nirvana. I may realize nirvana in the fundamental original meaning of the word, namely the extinction, the complete extinction of the fires of greed, hate, and delusion. And I may experience associated with it that sublime, unoriginated peace of mind which accompanies the extinction of greed, hate, and delusion. That may take place. But when this existential mortal dies, everything that you know of him or that there is of him completely dies. The death is total. And it must be so. It has to be so. I'll try and suggest why. We think that we are progressing, that we are realizing. Nothing of the sort. It is transcendence which is realizing itself through us. That ultimate, extraordinary consciousness, which is utterly different from our vijnana, that consciousness, desiring to express its potentialities, the potentialities of the primordial, undifferentiated creative energy, constricted itself in order to release a cosmos. Now, when I say release a cosmos, I don't mean only the cosmos that is open to our gaze and which scientists can examine and explore. That is not the whole of the cosmos. There are grades and grades of manifestation which are totally beyond anything that the human race will ever realize. I mean, as far as scientific observation is concerned. All those grades imply that this primordial creative energy and consciousness have constricted themselves in order to produce particular manifestations. And when that particularity has come to the state of the cosmos that we know, then the context of this cosmos is finite, temporal, and mortal. Look at it this way. From the time we are born till the time we die, assuming that we live a life of several years, we wear various suits, don't we? We have clothes. When one set of clothes is worn out, we cast it aside. I always use it for floor cloth myself, but we cast it off and then we have another suit. Transcendence wears incalculable millions of suits. Us. Now, do sense that. You know how attached we get to a suit. I like this because you always see me with this jacket. It's not because I like it, but this is the only one I can afford. And I have worn it year after year. All the best things I have materially are presents given out of love by friends. You see, those are the best things that I have. So, transcendence wears all of us as suits. From Hitlers and Torquemadas to Buddhas and Christs and Zarathustras and Krishnas. Now, regard it that way, and we will realize something of extreme importance. there is nothing whatsoever for me, the existential mortal. Nothing which is going to be a prize, a reward, an attainment, an achievement, a fulfillment, a gain, or anything like that. Nothing whatsoever. Now this sounds terribly radical, terribly drastic, and one might say, well, what on earth am I wasting my time trying to be good and so forth, if there is nothing for me at the end? It's a very austere, a very radical statement that I'm making. But you see, this existential mortal, which is called me, which I refer to as I, when I use the word I'm referring to this existential mortal, and you, looking at me, would say you to me, as I would say you to you, isn't it? This is entirely perishable. This is one of the tremendous things that the Buddha pointed out more clearly than anybody else. This is completely perishable. Then, if you ask, what is the use of it all? The question doesn't apply. We cannot question transcendence. We cannot question the absolute, the supreme creative power is beyond all questioning. This creative power creates incessantly without consequence. The word karma, the root of it is kri. And kri in the dictionary gives you just a petty little definition: to do, to make. It is to create, not to do or to make. Doing and making is a mechanical process. Creating is something transcendent. You have to brood upon this sort of thing, brood upon it deeply, in the quiet, in a state of peace, and in those states when you are terribly depressed, terribly miserable, out of the intensity of sorrow and out of the intensity of the ecstasy which you can experience, then enlightenment will come. If I can see, as I have written in this book, in chapter 15, there is nothing whatsoever for me to gain or to achieve, but there's everything to shed. All my desires, my wishes, my conceits, my ideas, my everything. Everything to shed, you see. What happens when the existential mortal sheds everything? Have you ever thought of it? Transcendence functions freely through you. This is what happened with Gautama the Buddha. He was Siddhartha Gautama. He became the Buddha, having shed all greed, hate, delusion. The psyche completely voided. This is the fundamental meaning of the word void, where we human beings are concerned. Completely voided enabled that which was transcendence itself to function freely through that perfected apparatus. The apparatus died, of course. You know how in the First Noble Truth, dukkha, birth, aging, decrepitude, decay, death. Was a single one of them transcended by Gautama the Buddha? Gautama, towards the end of his life, when he was 80, my age, he had a meal, he had a very severe tummy ache, tummy upset. He recovered from that, and then finally, when death came, it came, and it came with him entering all the different jhanas and samapattis, coming back again to the first, and then at the fourth jhana, the critical point between that which is concerned with the total manifestation in the universe and the transcendent, and then he gave up. He passed away. So you see, transcendence realized itself as enlightenment. The Sammasambodhi through Gautama the Buddha. Siddhartha Gautama, if he were here, I'm sure would say, I didn't do anything. And if he were to think that we were intelligent enough to understand such things, he would have, I'm sure, said, it is the Atta, the Atma, which has manifested itself as enlightenment through this prepared vehicle. That light manifests as light through that bulb, which is the apparatus for receiving this invisible transcendent thing, electricity. It's like that. Now, if we can see that sort of thing, we become completely free of all self-conceit. And it is easy to become free of all grasping. Ananda, said the Buddha, the freedom from all grasping is deathlessness. All grasping, not merely material things, not merely anything that belongs to the entire context of the finite, temporal and mortal, but also that which belongs to the context of the infinite, eternal and immortal. Mustn't grasp at it. Don't try to grasp at God or Brahman or Atma. You will only, at the end of your days, die a miserable failure. Although you may not feel miserable, you may think, I've done awfully well. But the transcendent may have a different view. So, if we really want to live the holy life, we must see very clearly that there is nothing for us. It is a complete relinquishment of everything that belongs to the perishable, to the realm of dukkha. Complete relinquishment altogether. And then there will be that kind of selflessness, that freedom from all selfness, conscious or unconscious, which enables you to live the holy life in the real sense, completely dedicated to the transcendent. Now, don't feel, oh, this is all quite impossible for me. Of course it is impossible, but it is the only possible thing also. The impossible is the only possible thing for any one of us. You see, our trouble, we measure things. Oh, I have come to this stage, I can enter the first jhana. Oh, I have come to this stage, oh, I can enter the fourth jhana, you see, and so forth. Or, oh, I am a bodhisattva now, and so forth. How do you measure these things? What sort of spiritual foot rule is there for this sort of estimation? None whatsoever. None whatsoever. And do you think that transcendence is concerned with our measurements? Not at all. I said yesterday, each and every one of us is unique. Do realize that. Each and every one of us is unique. Transcendence is working itself out through each and every one of us in a different sort of way. Do you think that transcendence is so poverty-stricken that it is not capable of incalculable uniqueness throughout the cosmos? No, it's not like that. This is the marvel of the transcendent. This is the implication of infinity and eternity. So, be happy, be satisfied that you are you, just you are you. And your task is to be you. What that you means, you yourself have to discover. And that discovery is made by living the good life. It's quite simple. That is all. If you don't live the good life, you'll never discover yourself. Now, if one sees this, a very wonderful thing happens. One is free from any excluding of anybody or anything in the whole world. The heart of love has matured in you. There is a complete natural acceptance, natural, spontaneous, inevitable and invariable. A complete acceptance. I come here to this school because I care for the people who come to the meetings. I really care, not for the merely for the existential mortal or for his or her capacities or abilities and so forth, but because transcendence is trying to manifest something through each and every one here. And if what I can do can be of the least little help in that direction, transcendence has worked its will through this particular bulb, which will burst before very long. And that is service. The real service. It is very, very difficult to be free of selfness and the feeling that, at the end I will gain something. This limited I is our Mephistopheles. You can't have a fight with him. Don't try to fight with your Mephistopheles. Because he is much cleverer than you. You think now you've got him, you're going to shoot him dead, and you fire your gun, but you'll find that he's there, and you can't see him. That is the I. He's very, very clever, very, very subtle. You see? So, be content to just to be yourself, completely yourself. Try and find out what is your calling, your special calling in life. And the Atma, the Atta, use any word you like, but that which is transcendent, which is not subject to delusion or to death in any shape or form, that will be fulfilled through you. And then you will live and die in peace and happiness. I say these things out of love. So many people during these last 40 or 50 years have said to me, but you are an awful person. You absolutely take away everything from underneath me. That is my business. That's just what I have to do. Take away all these useless props. Love is a terrible fire. It is a fire which completely destroys that which is not true. It is a fire which lights up the reality within yourself, so that transcendence gets manifest through you and you are a benediction and a blessing to your environment. That is love. Utterly free of grasping anything whatsoever. That is why you know how in the New Testament they say God is love. In the theistic religions, all the theistic religions, I don't know about Islam because I haven't studied Islam sufficiently, but all the great theistic religions present God as love, essentially as love. Because love is the creative energy, love is the energy which heals. But true love, not our calf love, which we experience throughout our lives. I tell you, it's a destructive fire. It's terrible. But it is also the supreme healer.
And is that the burning bush of Moses that burned and was not consumed?
Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. And you know the statement, love maketh wise. How can love make us wise if we wish to be left sentimental? That sentiment, which is the tremendous, irresistible urge towards transcendence, Samma Sankappo, perfect aspiration, that love is the supreme love. If you can love the transcendent, you will have all love, and it will come to you also from your surroundings. It may bring pain. Doesn't ordinary human love as we know it, between man and man, woman and woman, man and woman, parent and child, doesn't it bring difficulty, pain, anxiety also? But we have to learn to accept, to understand that pain, and then we are perfectly stable if we understand that pain. And no one can understand on your behalf. You have to understand for yourself. Stand under. Remember, I think I said it yesterday or day before. Be the foundation. You know that statement, the heaven is my throne, the earth, comes in Isaiah, doesn't it? The earth is my footstool. What house shall ye build for me? And the answer comes from him who lives the holy life. Then he himself, the existential being, John Smith, is the house for transcendence to dwell in. Without rejecting transcendence. You see how in history the great teachers all experienced rejection, didn't they? Moses experienced rejection, Zarathustra experienced rejection very strongly, Jesus found rejection, and so on and so on. The Buddha found more acceptance than any of the other teachers. He had the most fortunate life of them all. But that is how it is. So now, let this be perhaps the last exhortation I can give you. Remember, there is nothing for myself. I have nothing, there is nothing for me, myself. If I, the existential, become nothing whatsoever, then actually I shall be the no thing. I shall be at one with that primordial, undifferentiated, creative energy which is absolute consciousness and which holds potentially within itself everything on all planes. That is how it is. But this brain will never know it. Thank goodness it won't. Because it is the brain that will introduce spiritual pride and all the rest of it. Knowledge is a dangerous thing. But wisdom is our birthright and the final fruition. You see how wisdom comes in all the religions of the world. The supreme being in Zarathustrian teachings is Ahura Mazda. Ahura, Lord of life, life eternal, which means creative energy, and Mazda means wisdom. Lord of life and Lord of wisdom is Ahura Mazda. And Mazda also has another meaning, matter, strangely enough. The wisdom which is the formative influence of pure with respect to pure energy, which makes a meaningful pattern, which makes a proper shape, and so forth. So, let us learn how to be nothing whatsoever. And in that nothingness, that bindu, that shunya, is contained the totality. You remember, I think it was on Saturday, last Saturday, I read a little bit out of the Chandogya Upanishad. The space within the heart, as it is called. That space is as large as the transcendent space which includes everything. That's what the Upanishad said. And that Upanishad particularly stresses, particularly emphasizes that the infinite is bliss. That you are the infinite. That the Atma is infinite. One has to be very, very quiet within oneself. Very quiet and brood over these things. And just let the brooding take place. Don't try to search for anything or look out for some bright idea. All bright ideas end in the dustbin. You see? So now, I'm very grateful to all of you and to the Venerable Bhikkhus for their presence, which is to me always an inspiring presence. I'm very grateful to you for having allowed me to do a little bit even to help all of us to get along with the holy life. And I wish you happiness, the happiness which is peace. And I wish you all that transcendent silence which enables the existential to be in communion with the transcendent. A communion which in the silence and the quiet takes place through each and every sense function. The senses are the cords of communion. The religions of the world have, when they have been presented by thinkers and philosophers and those who haven't completely freed themselves from the results of their conditioning, the senses have been maligned quite unnecessarily. In the years before the last World War, when I occasionally used to go to a cinema, I saw a picture which was called a film which was called More Than a Secretary. More Than a Secretary. And the secretary was a very talkative person, extremely keen on physical fitness. And as a typist, she used to make a few peculiar mistakes. Her boss dictated, "Dear Mr. Hotchkiss," and she typed, "Dear Mr. Hotkiss." You see? And this secretary was a perpetual chatterer, non-stop chatterer. But she said one thing which was really quite interesting. She said that my mother always used to say, "Maisie, take care of your body, it's all you've got." You see? So, happiness comes with peace, with the quiet, with the silence. And that is not just happiness which is sukha, it is happiness which is ananda. There's a lovely discourse in the third volume of the Majjhima which the Buddha gives about happiness and all its grades of expression. I forget the name of the, but it's in the early part of the third volume of the Majjhima. You'll find it easily if you look through the volume. So it is not sukha, certainly not sensational delight, sensational pleasure, because nothing is such a guarantee for misery as the pursuit of sensational delight. It's not that. It is this sublime, unoriginated, ineffable peace and quiet, which is bliss. I like to use the word bliss in English, only that word, in association with ananda. The very sound, ananda, has a certain quietness about it, hasn't it? It's a blissful sound. So, it is that sort of peace that I wish for all of you. Because remember, without that kind of bliss, without that kind of peace, one can't proceed very far towards enlightenment. You look at the second volume of the Samyutta Nikaya, in the translation by Miss Horner. No, it's by, I forget who, Mr. Woodward, I think. In that second volume, there is a marvelous statement by the Buddha which doesn't make the Paticca Samuppada end in the usual way, you see, but goes on step by step and speaks of quiet, rapture, and rapture is necessary for concentration and on to enlightenment. You see, you read it. It's the one and only discourse which presents it. That is, it's not found anywhere else in the Pali Canon, as far as I know, anyway. You see, so read that, and it will give you great strength. If you not just read the words, but really enter into the spirit of those words. And that will give you strength to go on and realize your own destiny. Don't try to follow in the footsteps of the Buddha. Your feet will never fit those footprints. They are the footprints of transcendence. We have footprints for ourselves, our own size in shoes, which is always different from everybody else's size in shoes. Do remember that. And then there will be real fulfillment. Don't predetermine that I would like to become this, that or the other. If you have that liking, conscious or unconscious, it will defeat your efforts. It will completely defeat your efforts. See the star, your star, and keep seeing it. Don't try to grab it, don't try to run towards it. Just as our beloved late president founder used to say, walk on. And thank you all very, very much indeed.